Hello, this is Susan, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading from the Investigative Post on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. The city of Buffalo will return more than half of a $2 million federal grant it received in 2021 for lead hazard remediation. Investigative Post in May reported that the Buffalo Urban Renewal Agency had spent only about a quarter of its lead hazard reduction program grant funded by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Borough officials told Investigative Post in a statement that the program remains in progress and that $796,050 in grant funds have been earmarked or spent on lead remediation. That's $300,000 more than the city had spent 4 months ago, but it leaves $1.2 million the city must return to HUD. This is a major failure on behalf of the city, said Sarah Wooten, Director of Community Research at Partnership for the Public Good. The city wasted this money, and it's really concerning to think about how many children could otherwise have been kept healthy in these homes if they had been remediated. This is a major failure on behalf of the city. Partnership for the Public Good, along with community stakeholders and elected officials like State Senator April Baskin and Assemblymember John Rivera, in June criticized the city's poor advertisement of the program to homeowners and its failure to spend the remaining grant money. Rivera, who advocated for the advancement of state legislation that encourages accountability for both insurers and homeowners in cases of child lead poisoning, told Investigative Post that the $1.2 million loss shows a level of incompetence among city leaders in running the lead hazard reduction program. It's the job of all of us that represent the city to try to bring resources to Buffalo and to have the city of Buffalo do nothing with it and waste time and not accomplish what it's meant to do is an embarrassment, he said. HUD last year granted a one-year extension for the remainder of the lead hazard reduction money to be spent. The city applied for another extension this year, but was denied. Borough Senior Director Hope Young Watkins previously told the Investigative Post. In addition to underspending, the agency also fell short on the number of homes that the funds were intended to remediate. Borough announced plans with the grant's rollout to remove lead hazard from 110 residences. To date, work has been either completed or contracted in 34 units. Investigative Post asked Borough to confirm how many of those units were fully remediated, but the agency has not responded. Borough officials previously attributed the program's poor rollout to a lack of qualified contractors in the city and guidelines for the program that initially made many homeowners ineligible to apply for funding. Council Member Mitch Nowakowski, whose Fillmore district has some of the highest rates of lead poisoning in the state, decried the city's mismanagement of the program. The loss of federal lead remediation funding is devastating for Buffalo families, while grant guidelines are designed to safeguard taxpayer dollars. Requirements like parents handling over their children's, health records make it nearly impossible to get money out that door, Nowakowski said in a statement to Investigative Post. Buffalo's 14212 zip code, which encompasses neighborhoods in Nowakowski's district, had the most confirmed cases of child lead poisoning in the state, according to the most recent publicly accessible data from the State Department of Health released in 2020. A quarter of all children tested in the neighborhood were found to have elevated blood lead levels. Ayat Nieves, a member of Buffalo's Lead Safe Task Force, said he contacted Burra about implementing a lead blitz enhancement plan in response to the unspent grant money. He said his recommendations fell on deaf ears. City Hall is where dreams go to die. If you take a good idea to City Hall, they will find every way to ignore it, he said. They just can't get out of their own way. City officials previously claimed that Erie County should assume responsibility for lead remediation because the county receives more federal funding. Rivera said that Burra's handling of the grant speaks more to a lack of direction than a lack of money, considering Erie County receives lead remediation money from the same federal source, but has been more effective at dispersing funds and remediating homes than the city. This is a prime example of city receiving funds for a specific thing that everyone acknowledges is needed and requires attention and has cost, and they're not able to manage it. So the next time the city cries wolf around, we don't have enough money to do this or that, do we really know if that's the case, or is it just more mismanagement, Rivera said. State officials have taken steps to tackle Buffalo's lead crisis. State Attorney Letitia James Monday reached a $515,000 settlement agreement with a San Diego-based landlord who rented out properties where 14 children were believed to have been exposed to high levels of lead. This is the fourth lawsuit the Attorney General has filed against the landlord and property management groups for lead-related charges in Buffalo since 2021. Governor Kathy Hochul announced in 2023 an initiative to develop a statewide rental registry and proactive rental inspections program. That program will entail the state awarding $10 million to Erie County over a five-year period beginning this year. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Investigative Post on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Next, detainees allege shoddy medical care at ICE Batavia. Amputation for untreated frostbite among the examples of medical neglect cited in court papers, other documents, and interviews. This is written by Dale Schumacher. The U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents and staff have administrated what experts say was shoddy medical treatment to at least a dozen detainees at the Batavia facility in the past 2 years, Investigative Post has found. Serious injuries went untreated, medications were denied or scaled back, and needed medical appointments were delayed at the ICE detention center. In one case, a Nigerian migrant arrived in February at the detention facility suffering from frostbite. A doctor who provided emergency care ordered that he see a specialist within a week before releasing him into immigration custody. Agents in Batavia never took him to the appointment, and by the time he saw a doctor, it was too late to save his fingers. Parts of six were later amputated. In another case, a Gambian man with numerous heart issues was detained by ICE in February after he showed up for a routine check-in appointment. The man went 2 weeks without his medication, and he suffered a stroke-like syndrome as a result, according to a doctor. Attorneys and other detainee advocates told Investigative Post that the cases documented by this reporting are indicative of a wider problem, and a 2023 investigation by NPR found similar problems across ICE's network of detention centers. Stephanie Delsimer, an attorney with New York Lawyers for the Public Interest, who has studied medical treatment in ICE facilities in New York, said the agency's treatment of detainees amounts to medical neglect in a legal sense. The lack of medical care, and with ICE being deliberately indifferent to people's medical needs, could, in many of these instances, rise to the level of a constitutional violation, she said. It certainly appears to be a violation of ICE's own detention standards. Those standards include providing prescribed medications, timely responses to medical complaints, and hospitalization as needed. The Batavia facility lacks a doctor and dentist working on site. That's for a 650-bed detention center that's been over capacity for months due to the Trump administration's crackdown on migrants. A Department of Homeland Security Inspector General report published in June noted that staffing shortages caused delays in dental and off-site specialty care. Between September 2024 and February 2025, the report said, ICE had a 150-person backlog of detainees who required outside medical treatment and were waiting for appointments. That problem was noted previously in a 2018 Civil Rights and Civil Liberties investigation into medical care at Batavia. That audit gave the facility a passing grade, but also found several examples of detainees waiting for various specialty health care services for more than a month. In one case, a detainee waited 168 days for an endocrinology appointment. And in another case, the auditor found that a detainee requested an outside doctor appointment for blood in his stool, but that ICE deleted the request from its internal system. It's just freak luck that no one has died in Batavia in the last 2 years, said Aaron Krupp, the regional coordinator at Justice for Migrant Families. By the way that they have treated people, people really easily could have died. This story is based on a review of nearly 600 pages of court filings from 7 lawsuits, medical records, and other documents, as well as interviews with a dozen people, including detainees, attorneys, and other experts. Neither ICE nor DHS, its parent agency, responded to detailed questions and requests about each case in this story. Injuries go untreated. Chidi Nwegbo moved from Nigeria to the United States in 1988, living for 37 years as a model resident with no criminal history, according to his attorney. When Donald Trump took office in January, he said in a July interview, things just went helter-skelter, like raids everywhere, and I didn't know what to do. He made a plan to move to Canada to live with his brother and paid a smuggler $2,000 to shepherd him and 3 other migrants to Quebec. The final leg of the journey required them to cross the border on foot, but Nwegbo said he was unprepared for freezing temperatures and waist-deep snow. He and a woman in his party eventually called the Royal Canadian Mounted Police to rescue them. After a hospital stint, he was released into federal immigration custody on February 10th with the orders from a doctor that he see a specialist at Kessler Burn and Trauma Center in Rochester to treat his frostbitten fingers within a week. ICE never took him to the appointment, according to Nwegbo's medical records, which he shared with an investigative post. And by the time he saw a different doctor at a different practice 16 days later, his fingers were too far gone. Amputation would be necessary, the doctor told him. He's now missing portions of 6 fingers. I shouldn't have lost my fingers, he said. And the case of Tim, another Nigerian, is similar. In April this year, Tim, who asked to remain anonymous for fear of retribution against his family, was days away from finishing a federal prison sentence for a fraud conviction when he fell down a set of stairs. He suffered a major concussion and was taken to a Massachusetts hospital. Upon discharge, he was prescribed 9 drugs, ordered to attend inpatient physical therapy, and transferred to the Batavia Detention Center. And once at the detention center, he went at least a month without medication and received only 2 physical therapy sessions before being deported this summer. By that point, Tim required a walker. "I'm very traumatized at the moment," he said during an interview with Investigative Post in May, several weeks after his injury. "I suffer a lot of mental health issues. I cannot sleep, and I am on zero medications." Reached recently by mail, Tim said his condition has only deteriorated since his return to Nigeria. He wrote, "I am in dire need of a comprehensive medical health neurological treatment in order to get my life back to where it used to be before my detention in the United States." Medications denied. ICE, in some cases, denied detainees access to needed medications. In other cases, the agency allowed lapses in their medication schedules. That was the case with Sering Cisse, the Gambian man with heart conditions. He was detained by ICE in New York City on February 19th after what he expected to be a routine immigration appointment. Instead, ICE placed him in shackles and chains and transported him to Batavia. He spent 2 weeks without his medication. On March 4th, he attended a legal clinic hosted by attorneys from the legal advocates at Robert F. Kennedy Human Rights, who quickly realized Cisse needed medical attention, according to court filings. "I was feeling very weak and my entire body just hurt," Cisse said in a filing. "I felt like when I had my heart attacks." U.S. District Judge Lawrence Velardo later ordered Cisse released, but not before he was diagnosed with a stroke-like syndrome because he had missed so many days of his medicine. Without strict adherence to these medications, Cisse is likely to suffer from recurrent heart attacks, worsening peripheral artery disease and strokes, and increasing his risk of further disability and avoidable premature death, said Dr. Joseph Shin, a physician and professor with Weill Cornell Medicine. And he wrote in a letter submitted as part of Cisse's lawsuit. In Owen Sims' case, ICE provided him with medication but lowered his dosages, he said, leaving him at risk of a seizure. An extensive immigration and criminal history landed Sims in the Batavia Detention Center last March, where he remained until he was transferred to an out-of-state ICE facility in October. During a previous deportation to his home country, Jamaica, Sims was struck in the head with a machete. He and his wife testified in immigration court filings, which left him suffering from seizures. An immigration judge later ruled that he should not be deported due to the likelihood he'd be attacked again if he returned to Jamaica. In an interview, Sims said his detention by ICE caused him to miss several days of his anti-seizure medication. He said the agency then lowered his daily dose from 15 grams to 1,000 milligrams, and he now worries he'll suffer another seizure, which in the past has put him in a coma. "My seizures come on to me when I'm sleeping, and if you're not next to me, you can't even know that I'm having a seizure," he said. "It's scary, like it's really scary." Five other detainees have claimed that ICE denied or delayed them receiving prescribed medication. ICE standards call for all detainees to be provided prescribed medication, including a week's supply before deportation. In March 2024, an ICE transfer from Florida to Batavia caused Raheem Fulton, a Jamaican immigrant suffering from end-stage renal disease, to miss a regularly scheduled dialysis appointment. He spent 5 days without the treatment and had to be rushed to Erie County Medical Center. In October 24, ICE attempted unsuccessfully to deport Naeem Qassami to his native Afghanistan. Against its protocols, ICE failed to provide Qassami with medications for his diagnosed bipolar disorder. His attorneys allege in a lawsuit to stop his deportation. And in July, a letter to ICE officials in Batavia, Advocates with Justice for Migrant Families, wrote that a Honduran man was not receiving a prescribed medical cream to treat a skin condition. The man also suffers from chronic pain, and ibuprofen was no longer working. Arzu Hami, an Iranian woman suffering from serious mental health issues, was detained in June as part of a sweep of Iran migrants shortly after the U.S. bombed Iran. Matthew Borowski, her attorney, alleged in court filings that her detention has prevented her from receiving medication. She was detained by Buffalo ICE agents at the Niagara County Jail before being transferred to Texas, where she is being denied adequate medical health care. And in the fifth case, a detainee, known only as KU in court filings, alleged he has not received proper medical care for numerous life-threatening health conditions. His lawsuit states an independent physician reviewed the man's case and expressed extreme concerns that he is not receiving standard of appropriate medical care. Some detainees were not properly treated for an injury or an illness they suffered while detained. A Malaysian man alleged he was beaten by several guards at the Batavia facility in February 24. And a Venezuelan man said in an interview that he suffered a severe allergic reaction and body pains after he was booked into the ICE facility and didn't receive adequate medical care. Dales Meir of New York, Lawyers for the Public Interest, has studied medical care at the Orange County Jail, the second largest ICE detention facility in New York. And through her research and legal work, she concluded that medical care offered by ICE is almost always subpar. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Investigative Post. Your reader has been Susan, and thank you for listening.
Good morning. Welcome to another broadcast day on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service, a private not-for-profit organization. Radio Reading volunteers broadcast daily readings of newspapers, magazines, and books to area blind and born handicapped persons who are provided reading radios. As always, please feel free to contact us with your comments, suggestions, or any questions you may have. Our phone number here is area code 716-821-5555. As always, please stay with us. Our Reading Buffalo News is coming up in just a second.
The following program is intended for listeners